So I guess it's like, as far as evolution is concerned, a hysterectomy is basically the same thing as suicide, then.
Hysterectomy is suicide?
As far as evolution is concerned.
Well, yeah, because it's a removing of your uterus, so.
Or a vasectomy, or whatever the male equivalent is called. Is that what it's called? I think this one's...
Greetings, listeners. Welcome to another round of The Sophisticates, where we get our thought on, right? Yeah, it's like a party, but we're thinking. That's awesome. I'm Matt Patches, and with me, as always, joining to duke it out is the wise sage, Rajan Mudambi.
Hello.
Yes, hello, that was a very wise hello. Thank you very much. But alas, because he's somewhere in the middle of Wyoming, I think, or something.
I think he's in Minnesota.
Minnesota. He's in Minnesota. Somewhere far away, canoeing with a group of impressionable 14-year-old boys. Our third teammate, Ryan Pfister, could not be here tonight, but we're happy to have a special guest, Mr. Tim LaFell. Now, Tim, you're not the same Tim LaFell who co-wrote the 2009 book, The World's Cheapest Destinations, 21 Countries Where Your Money is Worth a Fortune. Is that correct?
That is correct. In fact, I'm not a Tim LaFell at all. I'm a Tim Leffel.
Leffel?
Leffel. So the schwa is the second vowel.
Oh, I see. My mispronunciation. So, Tim, what do you do?
I am a graduate student in TA in linguistics at NYU.
What does that mean you do? Like, what does that even mean? What are you studying?
I study languages and language in general.
So text, speaking, talking. You're perfect for this show.
Speaking primarily. I study what language means. So I study semantics, but not in the usual sense of the word semantics.
That's why you were able to drop the schwa.
Nah.
Not many people can drop the schwa.
Right.
Wonderful. Let's get right into our discussions for today. Our first topic, courtesy of Tim, the lack of domesticated non-sex slavery.
Yeah, so the lowdown is for every, activity or good that has been viewed as socially deviant in some way in the history of this country, that activity has either become socially acceptable in the case of, alcohol after prohibition, or it has become illegal and a black market has arisen. So this would be the case in, say, prostitution, narcotics, etc. But for domestic slavery, right, there just seems to be no demand for this in this country. And I think this is just a curious fact. And this is kind of highlighted by a recent Law and Order episode where they try to say that there is some black market for domestic slavery. And it just seems kind of silly, right? It seems kind of unbelievable.
I mean, I think that Law and Order pretty much rips from the headlines these days. So I assume that something at some point has, I believe in this episode, I think I've seen the same one, that this Manhattanite rich couple adopts, quote unquote, some children from a foreign country and actually uses them as slaves. Is that right? They trap them in their basement.
Yeah.
I imagine that probably happens in some respects somewhere in this world, that people are either using their own children or adopting children into slavery. And obviously that's wrong. I'm thankful that we don't have our own slavery black market here. And I don't think that'll...
Yeah, of course.
You might be right that may never actually take off. That's basically the point, right? That the black market may never exist in the first place.
But if it does exist, it's certainly limited. And you certainly don't hear about it in the news like you hear about these other things.
Do you think they're keeping it out of the news?
Well, I mean, the first question is, does it exist at all?
I would venture yes.
You think so? And what level do you think it exists?
Well, I mean, okay, so lots of people smoke pot. Lots of people do so many illegal activities in this day, and they're not really affecting people. This, on the other hand, is obviously slavery, which we got through in a difficult time early in American history. Everyone thinks slavery is bad, so I don't think that people are going around really considering purchasing slavery or slaves in the same way that they're going around buying pot from their dealers.
But there's still sex slavery.
Slavery is wrong too, and that clearly happens.
But here in America, I mean, I know that people are kidnapped.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Are you serious?
I mean, okay. I agree that sex slavery across the world is a big thing, but I'm not sure it's that big in America.
Oh, you bet. Yeah, of course.
Where do you think that's taking place? Where have you heard of this taking
place? All across the United States, man. Young girls would get in the wrong situation, or
Well,
whatever.
They're basically being convinced to be prostitutes or something.
They're being forced to be prostitutes.
But you're saying that people aren't taking it the next level. Well, you, the reason there aren't straight up slaves is because you, the purpose of a slave would be to like do your dirty work, do your normal run of the day chores. And they'd be right. milling and around so, yeah. your house.
Well, you have, I mean, lots of people have, like rich people, for example, have hired help.
That's true.
Who could, like, clean their houses or, like, cooks or whatever. And those are things that house slaves did in the,
right.
back in the day when we had slavery.
Well, I think in this day and age that you get away, people get away, you know, having low-income immigrants, mostly. And you see this all the time, that people have a problem with hiring labor outside of the force, and that they're bringing in people that they shouldn't be employing. They it's morally incorrect for them to be paying them the very, very little that they do to have, you know, basically be slaves. So there is no black market because they can find people to pay next to nothing to do it.
I think the difference is that actually they have something better than slaves. Because slaves, you have to like maintain and pay, and rather not pay, but
they
you have
live
to
with
feed.
You
have
yes.
to you have to give them board. You have to do all these things for slaves, and also you're kind of like, since you own them, you're stuck with that individual for
right.
Their
nobody wants to own slaves
life.
These days.
So
they're
you,
a burden.
So you want your you'd have to keep make sure your slaves are healthy and stuff. Whereas if you're paying let's say a Mexican migrant worker or whatever to come and do these things, you can pay them very little, but also you don't have to care about whether they're eating enough, where they're living.
Right.
And also if they get sick, who cares?
This is from the perspective of the evil, terrible slave owner. Let me just emphasize this.
Oh yeah, of course. It's from their perspective.
Right.
But I think what's keeping people back from, I mean, I am positive there are people who would be totally fine with quote-unquote slaves if they existed in this day and age. But, you know, there's a moral divide between paying someone pennies and paying them nothing and having them actually be slaves.
I don't think it's due to anything moral. I think it's just due to the fact that it's probably, as Rajan was arguing, less convenient to have a domestic slave than it is to hire someone for next to nothing, because you don't have to worry about extra things.
So you think there's
so I don't think that it says anything about the moral fabric of Americans that there's not much domestic slavery, rather.
So you think that there are enough people in this country who would actually have slaves if the real problem is taking care of them, the upkeep of slaves these days, is when you can get around just sending them home.
I think so.
That's disturbing.
It's highly disturbing.
I mean, but is it really more disturbing than the fact than sex slavery? I mean, which does exist, and I think that's definitely worse than this non-existent slavery.
I don't know if I'd say it's worse. They're just different things, right? I mean, for one, the reason why slavery was so prominent, you know, in the early 19th century is because they were largely used for farming, right? And now that would be completely useless because of machinery. And so I doubt if there ever would have been widespread slavery if there was no need for slaves because of farming, right?
Well, I mean they use them for other things.
They right,
did, but
I don't
they
think
did,
that they
but not
would
primarily.
Have.
Primarily. I think there's a reason why places like the American South and Brazil and like Haiti and all these plantation-based economies kept slavery longer than places like the northern U.S. or the U.K. or France or whatever. They all abolished slavery much sooner because there was less of an economic incentive for them to keep it around.
Yes.
Well, the interesting thing, and to kind of flip this on its head in some way, is so how do we put that burden on things that we think are detrimental? Well, I think slavery is detrimental, but you know, sex slavery and those other illegal activities that have black markets that have risen out of there, how do we put that same burden on people so that they don't indulge in that?
I think you have to make it not profitable.
That's a pretty sad statement about humanity, huh?
It is, but I...
Oh, no, we're the worst.
I mean, we kind of are, though, right? So
we've come to
a
realization. We're dwindling.
I mean, we're the ones who invented... Like, humans are the ones who invented slavery in the first place, which I think that speaks pretty, you know, poorly against our general credibility.
I know, the fact that we indulged it in the first place and had to realize that it was wrong. is kind of sick.
But at the same time, it doesn't mean, I mean, just because there's a black market for something doesn't mean, just because sex slavery exists doesn't mean that everybody in this country condones the activity, right?
That's true. I certainly don't.
I mean, if a black market for you know, household slavery were to arise, it doesn't mean that as a nation we would be okay with this.
That's true, but you would hope that also people would take a stand against it.
Right. Well, surely most people would.
Most people would frown upon it. The difference
is
actually
doing something.
Yeah,
most people would wear a t-shirt and be aware, I think.
That's the problem with activism.
If it became like the popular thing to wear a t-shirt about, I think.
Yes, exactly. Well, on that note, hopefully the black market on non-sex slavery never arises and we never have to deal with this problem. But if it is, then I'm ready to take a stand against it. And I think the two of you are with me on that one. So thank you. Why don't we jump into our second topic for tonight? Broadcasting your life-threatening diseases. So basically, I was having a conversation with my uncle the other day, who's in his 30s, and he was letting me know that a bunch of his friends, and this is kind of sad, our whole episode is just terribly sad today, but that a bunch of his friends have invited him to join them on this website called CaringBridge.com, which is essentially a social media site for people who have terminal illnesses and want to share updates on said illnesses. Now, I was taken aback by this. I thought this was kind of strange. And while he made a valid case for why it was great to connect, I was just, it weirded me out. Now listen to this. This is a video that's on the Caring Bridge site, kind of explaining in a rather frightening way, in my opinion, what the site does.
When you or a loved one experiences a serious health event, sharing updates with people who need to be informed can be difficult and emotionally draining. But there is an easier way. A free CaringBridge website can help you save time and energy by making it easy to share updates. With CaringBridge, you can keep everyone up to date with the same accurate information. Your updates can reach family, friends, colleagues, neighbors, and members of your community. In turn, they can share messages of love and support, which you can read and respond to any time of day. It's easy. Create your personal CaringBridge website in just a few minutes.
So yeah, basically, you know, you can send email blasts out, you can post about updates like, I'm doing well, or oh no, I'm downward spiraling towards death. And that seems like a very strange way of sharing that very personal information. I was wondering if in this day and age, maybe that's just the way we do it.
No, I mean, this is the same thing as a support group, except for on the internet, right? I mean, these things have existed in like person-to-person format for a long time.
But in those cases, it's physical person-to-person. And this is just like if on Facebook, I made an update that maybe 50 people could see that like my cancer is getting worse.
Yeah, but only if they were on Facebook for the sole purposes for the sole purpose of seeing things like that, which I don't think anyone would be unless they were some kind of.
Maybe this is just my own personal feelings on how I would approach something like this, but it doesn't seem like the formal way to kind of present that information to a person. Like, this is a really big moment. This is an important. Every piece of information that comes out of something kind of sad like this seems something I'd want to tell somebody or call someone about, not email blast.
I'm sure they are telling people, you know, the people who are on the spot, but I'm sure there's some sort of solace or whatever that you get from connecting with other people who are going through the same sort of situation. Like Tim said, kind of like a support group.
But you're not you only reach out to people you know through CaringBridge. It's not like, oh, here's the forum for people who are dealing with the same thing.
Yeah, so but there's two things, right? So for one, sure. The people you know nowadays are more often than they were in the past people who you met on the internet, right? So this is one thing to consider, and it wouldn't be sort of not normal to see them actually in person when your entire relationship is online. I forgot my second point, but I'll remember in a moment.
But on the other hand, like, because of how Facebook has connected us with people that we are less personally connected to, you know, like people from high school, that you just kind of know, acquaintances, would, I don't know if I would want to share these moments with them. And I find that on Facebook, even, you know, with marriages and pregnancies and sort of big moments that are more positive in people's lives, I still am a little weirded out by having that shared moment with them. And I think that this is like stepping across a line. Like, guess what? I almost don't want to know. And that sounds bad, but I don't want to know these sort of things from everyone.
Well, so it's kind of like on a kind of a slightly different level. It's kind of like those people who send out mass Christmas cards to like everyone.
Right.
To, you know, just a huge list of people that they maybe don't even know that well now, even now. Maybe they did at some point, but just like telling all these things. And generally speaking, those are just to like brag about what Johnny is doing in, with his violin mm-hmm. or whatever. But I mean, it's the same sort of thing where you're sharing all this stuff with people who you don't know that well and probably don't care.
But it's interesting how they use the word kind of like bragging. You know, I would never... Again, I'm being very careful here because I obviously feel terrible for the people who have to go on Caring Bridge because that's a horrific event. But I do feel like if I got an email from someone I was only loosely connected to, that it no longer seems like a personal outreach for that information. It seems like, okay, here's the feel bad for me card, you know, as the inverse of that Christmas card. That's just like, here's all the great things that are happening to me. But I just wonder if... Pushing this information on people, I know it might be a blessing for some, but is it a burden on others? And is that fair for other people to feel that way?
I mean, they choose to join the site, right? So
that's true. It's their own fault.
You shouldn't have said yes.
But I mean, I would feel bad saying no, right?
Yeah. Do they know that you said no? They probably do, right?
They get a big email with a giant red no.
Well, if they call you on the phone.
Well, that's the thing. Like, if this person really wanted me to know how they feel... Or what they want, what's going on in their lives, then why wouldn't they contact me directly?
Sometimes it's easier to say things in a non-verbal form or whatever.
That's true.
And I mean, this would you be opposed to instead of having this, just like them sending out a mass email to people, giving the updates?
No, I think that's just as
so
impersonal.
It's kind of, yeah, it's the same sort of thing, but sometimes it's easier to say these things when you're writing them versus when you're saying them.
I think the exterior of caringbridge.com also makes it like weird, cheery. You know, It feels like a Facebook. It feels like an online dating site. It feels like OkCupid. You know what I mean? It's this added glitter. It's like, oh, share this. You know, it becomes strange. Because it works in the same mechanics as these other social media sites that we use so often. And I see why it does that, because that's the way the world is working these days. But
I mean, you have to attract, if you're looking at it from the Caring Bridge perspective, they need to, in order to exist, they need to attract people to their website. And so you need to present it
you
in
need
a
to
way
make,
that is going to make people want to come.
Make it nice.
Yeah. So if I just had this like dark and dismal looking website, I don't think terminally ill people would want to just go to that website.
If you seriously got an email from someone you were loosely connected to, kind of barely knew in high school about this, wouldn't you'd be a little uncomfortable?
No, I would just not join.
You would deny them.
Of course.
But they would know. Maybe.
I don't know this. I mean, this is the problem with the internet, right? Like, there's a lot of people who I can see on my Facebook. I don't care about their life at all, but it's, you know.
That's the weirdest part about it for me, that if is they're kind of imposing this feeling on people by using Caring Bridge and that.
Yeah. I think it would be good. I think it's good for people who are terminally ill to meet other people who are terminally ill on the internet and have meaningful interactions with them and sort of,
right.
you know, work through things together in the same way that people do with support groups.
Caring Bridge would be a better forum. It would be a better
if it connected
more people who are in the same boat as opposed to as an avenue for reaching out, kind of guilt tripping people.
So I haven't been to the site, but does it have like, so on Facebook you have like, you know, birth date, networks, relationship status, whatever. Is one of the fields on Caring Bridge disease and like expected date of death or something?
I mean, I've not been invited by anyone, and I also haven't created a page, so I don't know for sure. I don't know if it's as Facebook-y as that description, but I could see it becoming that. It seems reasonable, right? That's weird.
I don't know if it seems reasonable. I mean, given what already exists, maybe it seems.
Well, on that note, feel free to invite any of us to caringbridge.com if you feel inclined to. I mean, I would say yes. Don't get me wrong, but I don't know if something horrible has happened to you, you can give me a call. Just give me a call. On that note, why don't we move on to our third topic, something hopefully a little lighter than our past two topics, grooming as an anti-evolution statement. So I was walking around the streets the other day, and I see this man walk by me. Biggest mustache I've ever seen in my entire life. I mean, this man has this enormous mustache. It might have been a beard. I couldn't even tell it was so big. But it got me thinking, you know, like, why do I shave my face? Why don't I let myself grow this way? And kind of extrapolating on that idea, it's like, it's only natural. This hair just grows and grows and grows. It does that on its own. But for some reason, I've been trained. I'm inclined to shave my face because I've been told to, because it looks, quote unquote, better. But am I actually retracting from the way evolution is carrying itself out, the way nature has asked me to grow as a person? But I'm taking away from that plan, quote unquote.
So what you're saying is that if we were supposed to be evolving towards being hairless, having hairless faces, we should just not shave our faces and just like let sexual selection choose people who have less hair on their faces until
I'm kind of
everyone
thinking
is
well,
kind of no hair on their face.
If evolution wanted us to not have hair on our face, we would not grow.
Because evolution is the almighty God who.
Okay. Yeah. Well.
I mean, people dye their hair, and I don't think evolution gives a shit about what color your hair is, right?
Well, I'm just saying we take all these grooming things, cutting our hair. Obviously, we talk about that every episode. Snipping our fingernails and all these things that we do to keep ourselves tidy. But in the end, are we actually taking away from the direction that we're moving as people? Or are we diverting evolution in a different direction, for better or worse? As far as I've studied, evolution works in a way that it's like you exist in a place, and for millions of years, we didn't have these sort of tools to clean ourselves up. And as we progressed, we became what we are now, and we've only started doing it in the last couple centuries. And are we cutting ourselves off? Are we not being propelled in the direction that we've been going for millions of years by grooming ourselves?
I mean, I think,
sounds ridiculous.
I think
but
a lot of, not only just grooming, a lot of the tools that we've created for ourselves, making it easier for us to get along without certain attributes. So, like, we don't need to be necessarily as strong as we might have needed to be back in the day because we have all these tools and implements that we can use to lift things and move things, whatever. So we're probably going to evolve and become weaker beings in,
well,
right, along the line. And so basically what we're doing is we're forcing us, or we're building all these crutches for ourselves, and we are forcing our descendants essentially to also have these crutches. So, like, if our descendants want to be clean shaven, they're all going to have to shave too, because we all shaved. And, you know, so that sort of selection, I don't think, is going to have any impact in our evolution. So it just won't change. Or at least that's the impression I get.
I mean, think about something more radical, like, you know, a hysterectomy or something. I mean, this is more anti-evolutionary than grooming, certainly.
Well, I mean, it seems like a bigger impact, but at the end of the day, it's the same physical change we're making on ourselves.
Well, no, because this ensures that you will not reproduce. Whereas
it just removes you from the evolutionary tree, that's all.
So I guess it's like, as far as evolution is concerned, a hysterectomy is basically the same thing as suicide, though.
Yeah. So, I mean, what grooming is doing, though, is it's keeping you in the gene pool, but masking your traits.
What did you say? Hysterectomy is suicide?
As far as evolution is concerned.
Well, yeah, because it's a removing of your uterus, so Well, somebody's uterus.
Or yeah, or a vasectomy, or whatever the male equivalent is called. Is that what it's called? I think that's called.
Yeah, vasectomy. Yeah, that would be an evolutionarily.
I'm just wondering what I'm losing for myself by cutting my hair.
You're losing hair.
It's an experience I don't have. You know what I mean? Like really long hair, really long fingernails. Am I diverting human evolution?
You're also eliminating places where parasites and like bugs could nest.
That's true, but that's not helping humanity. All that's doing is helping Patches' other traits get passed along. But it's not a helping humanity in that his descendants won't have shorter hair, and so they won't be protected from these parasites any better than he was, and so they will continue having to groom themselves by cutting their hair.
Well, maybe you have a gene that, you know, that compels you to cut your hair or something.
maybe.
Then it would be cut.
So that's what we're selecting towards, a gene that compels you to cut your hair.
Sure. Now, you know, I'm not a scientist. I'll be the first person to admit that. But that I'm still curious about, and like we were talking about, even tools that we've invented seem similar to me in comparison to grooming. Just the way we keep ourselves up because we want to look good in this present time. But as we change ourselves for better or worse, is that the way that the world around us isn't changing? Are we in line with that?
I guess kind of along the lines of your letter writing, helping historians. when we're using tools and doing all these things, we're not thinking about how this is going to impact our descendants. We're trying to get to work by driving or
sure.
Whatever. And so we're more concerned with, you know, what's happening in our day-to-day life, or maybe we're looking down the lines for later in our life, but I don't think most people think about how...
Even thinking presently, I mean, I know your hair has been long before, Rajan, but not very long, not really long, I don't even know what I'm missing right now by...
Are you talking from like an experience sort of point of view?
Maybe, but even how that, the experience of having really long facial hair or really long hair or really long nails or something impacts the world that I live in today.
Yeah.
Think
I don't even
Samson,
know how
that
works. That
was pretty impactful.
Wait, what was?
Samson.
You'll have to fill me in. I am not positive how Samson's beard affected the world around him.
So Samson and Delilah, right? So he's not supposed to cut his hair. I'm probably really botching this story because it's been a long time. And, you know, and then God tells him not to cut his hair, and then he does eventually anyway, and then something terrible happens. I can't remember what it
is. I think they just, like, he's basically unbeatable in battle and everything because of all his hair,
yeah.
And he just keeps
Why?
Killing myriads of Philistines. Ah, it's the Old Testament. These things happen.
God decreed it, and that was the way.
Why is not the right question to be asking.
Oh, I see.
But then, like, you know, Delilah convinced him to cut his hair, and then he got defeated, and then, like,
yeah.
Mutilated by Philistines. And
I can't imagine God and my beard length. I don't know if that's going to really, truly impact the world. But...
Patches, I think the reason why you haven't gone around massacring Philistines is that you've cut your beard.
My hair is too short.
Yeah.
I could be slaughtering so many Philistines right now. Well, apparently, I'm fine for the future. I'm going the right way cutting my hair.
Well, I mean, really, as far as evolution cares, all you gotta do is do what you gotta do to get some progeny. And so if cutting your hair is the way to go...
I need to mate.
You need to mate.
Whatever it takes. You know, Neanderthals had it so much easier than I do. There's too much shit going on. Well, on that note, thank you for appeasing my wild, insane theory on grooming. And Tim, thank you for joining us on this episode of The Sophisticates.
Thanks for having me.
And we wish Ryan Pfister was here because I would love to know how his haircut is holding up in Minnesota in the middle of woods, but
alas. Hopefully it's not getting infected.
I'm sure, yes, he was worried about, like, parasite. You know, grooming would take care of that. Evolution states that if he cut his hair, he'd be fine. Well, thank you very much, everybody, for listening to this episode of The Sophisticates. You know where to find us. We're on Twitter at Sophisticast. We are on Tumblr, thesophisticates.tumblr.com. We're on SoundCloud. Most importantly, we're on iTunes. If this is the first time listening, go to iTunes, subscribe to the podcast, The Sophisticates, download it every week. We're always here, and we love talking to you. And chime in with your own thoughts. Give us an email. Give us a shout. And we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.